Well, thank you, and good afternoon. I'm going to move right in because I've got a lot to cover, and what I would like to talk about isn't necessarily a specific research project, but some questions I've had about some of the landscape-level area-wide management that I've been engaged in. So what I'd like to leave with you today is that landscape really matters to IPM, that ecology, biology, geography, time, and they all interact to dictate pest, crop, natural enemy interactions. IPM systems are developed in specific time and space around that context, and as cropping landscapes change, the balance can be shifted to the pest potentially, which leads me to my question, what are the implications to IPM systems that have been around for 40 years? A landscape is obviously a mosaic of crops, weeds, and native plants. Now, your last speaker talked about Vermont. I'm going to talk about the San Joaquin Valley of California. A Mediterranean climate, all native plants, weeds, rangeland dries during the summertime. The insects are driven into the place where there's moisture and food, namely the irrigated areas. But those irrigated cropping systems, the annual crops, filter through the system, if you will. That as one crop is prepared for harvest in July and August, the bugs will move to the neighboring crop that is still in development. So you see, for an example, in this particular situation, where you have a safflower field next to a cotton field, this is going to dictate a large part of your IPM pressure or pest pressure you're going to find there. So as one crop changes, the crop remaining gets the benefit of the pest, both pests and natural enemies, I might add. So a cotton landscape operates something like this. Most arthropod, and again, I'm speaking to the San Joaquin Valley and in cotton. Most arthropod populations must rebuild each year. Populations must move into a field, and it is the surrounding cropping environment that determines the degree of pest severity. All crops and weeds can act as either a source or a sink for arthropod pests. The landscape mosaic has both spatial and temporal components. Some plants are more preferred than others, and the landscape can be manipulated. So said Dr. Vern Stern in the late 60s, and this has really provided us with a base in our system for trying to understand movement management of this particular pest. So in that context, our IPM guidelines for the last 20 to 25 years have been basically these. We depend on a weekly sampling of pests, natural enemies, and yield development brought together into an action or economic threshold to determine when chemical intervention may be necessary, conserve natural enemies as long as possible. Ligus is the key pest in our system, so our ligus goes, so does the entire system. Guidelines were developed over 40 years in cropping systems in which cotton was the dominant crop, with cotton bordering cotton in many cases. Alfalfa plays a key role as an important sink, acting as a permanent sink in the system, if you will. Well, things have changed in the last 20 years, to be sure. And this is just a graph showing the total cotton acreage in California over this time period. And just want to provide you with a spatial overview of what that looks like in the area we're working in from a true landscape standing. So you can see that we dropped down dramatically over the last 20 years. If you look at that from the ground, this is western Fresno County. Just as a point of reference, this is Interstate 5 and our West Side Research and Extension Center is located there around Five Points. This is a large ag production area, as you can see, but this is what the cotton mosaic looked like in 2000. You can see it's a pretty good, it pretty well dominates it. There's a sea of cotton in there. There's a lot of cotton that's buffered by cotton. There's a lot of cotton that's insulated from any other crop by surrounding cotton. Since the pests generally have to move in from outside, those who are insulated really had a fairly buffered system. On the other hand, the crops that appear in the white could be anything, as you'll see in a minute, from vegetables to permanent crops. Could be a source, could be a sink for ligus. As we move to 2005, you see that there begins to be more fragmentation in the environment, but still, there's a lot of continuity between cotton fields and but there's beginning to be more of a spread. 2008, this last season, this is what we were looking at. A very fragmented cotton landscape, a lot of surrounding multiple crops, a lot of, almost every cotton field has some influence of surrounding areas, and we can see a major change in the way that the potential pest pressure, as well as what our IPM programs might be doing. But it's just not the fragmentation in my mind. It's what is occurring in between those cotton fields. As part of a four-year, four-state project we're involved with on a ramp project, I won't go through this in detail except to point out that this is where our data set comes from. We sampled weekly, fairly intensively around 39 focus fields as well as some of the surrounding areas. This is the environment in which we were working. That circle represents the sort of the area for the ramp by the, just as an aside, that's the area that we're going to be looking at in terms of how does that influence the population we found in the center of that field. But primarily I wanted to point out, as you can see, it's a vivid mosaic of many crops: tomatoes, safflower, onions, garlic, vineyards, almond orchards, lettuce, grains. And these things, these crops are coming in and out of the system through the year. So that while tomatoes may not provide us with a major source of ligus, they can act as a place where they can be released when the tomatoes are harvested well before the cotton. So you can see that some of these things might be a source and others might not be. But we do know that safflower is a key ligus host and has been a key crop in our pest management system. In general, we see these kinds of distributions, 1986 example, a 2000 example, that there's some safflower fields scattered through the environment, but not greatly so. Generally, if you're located near a safflower field, you have a problem. It's a 1 or 2 week problem. You treat the field and you move on. The reason safflower is such an essential crop, it acts as a bridge between the winter and the summer. It allows a population to establish at a time when the cotton is in a critical fruiting stage. The insects are then released as the safflower is prepared for harvest. So it is proven through 40 years to be a key crop. But generally, this is what we see. It isn't much of a, except for a localized problem, it hasn't generally been a problem. This is what our sampling area looked like in 2007. We had a few safflower fields, but not a whole lot. We had some alfalfa in the surrounding area, but basically was what we would call a normal season. This is what our cropping system looked like in 2008. And there was a large increase in the safflower acreage, a decrease in the cotton acreage, a lot of proximity to cotton and safflower, and we had in this particular area, we had the worst pressure I've seen in 35 years in cotton fields. But you go to the north, you go to the south, and you did not find that kind of pressure. This was a unique situation in my experience, and it was almost completely landscape mediated. This just summarizes what that just said, that between 07 and 08 we had a decrease acres of cotton and increase acres in safflower, but that's not the whole story. The story is that you almost had a one-to-one concordance between the number of acres of cotton and safflower. In other words, the system pretty much was overwhelmed. These are some of the accounts we got from our ligus sampling, and one can see that dotted line there is what we use as our action threshold, and you can see that for these fields for most of the year, the most of the season, we were well over that action threshold. These are some of the highest populations we've ever seen in a cotton field, and it was high in all the surrounding crops as well. The result being that our fruit retention is how our yield develops, was incredibly impacted for 3 to 4 weeks. We took a 50-60% loss, was not uncommon. We were fortunate in having an open fall that allowed the top crops to set to some extent, but still yield is going to be down over 40% to 50%. It resulted also in an increase in insecticide use by almost threefold. In 2007, we used about 4 applications, which is a fairly normal expectation. We jumped to 11 this last year, which is a fairly unsustainable cost. So some key summary points. Our source-sink relationships have shifted, putting cotton at more risk. It isn't the same landscape as it was for 30 years because cotton no longer dominates, but is embedded in a cropping matrix that releases ligus over longer periods of time. Cotton fields are isolated and act as a sink surrounded by multiple sources, and it's a very different environment than where our IPM approaches were developed. Of course, safflower is an excellent host. Bridging, as I mentioned, it was planted over a wide range of dates, ensuring a large population continual flow, and other crops can act as an ephemeral sinks, but quickly convert to the role of ligus sources as harvest approaches. By that I mean you might be separated from a field by a mile or two, but the bugs are moving into those fields, and as those are prepared for harvest, they move on out. I go back to the common cotton dominance. Cotton generally doesn't act as a source for bugs to cotton because they're in pretty much sequence. And so a cotton field doesn't go out weeks before another cotton field. They're generally treated within a 3-week period alike. So by shifting this, we've moved into a situation that some of the other areas of the country have seen relative to the incredible pressures that this particular pest can come into. And it limits our abilities to sort of stay and wait and hold and wait for and conserve natural enemies. Our system was completely overwhelmed, and it's going to be a great challenge if this crop is going to stay there.
Just a
few quick acknowledgments to the GIS lab that helped create these maps. And I'll take any questions that people might have relative to this presentation. Got a couple minutes, I guess? Okay, thank you.